the delegation, and on behalf of our committee, we also want to express our condolences to you and to the family on the loss of your husband. In our tradition, we actually did not expect that you should be coming to appear before us when we are still mourning. Because we follow multiple cultures, we will understand why you are here. Can I give you the platform to address the Honorable Committee?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, and thank you very much for the words of condolences. I must say that I wrestled a lot about whether I should come or not, but I decided that this is quite important. I had to just pick up the pieces and move forward. Just by way of introduction, as we're entering this building, as you know, there's a visitor center, and we all are supposed to register at the visitor center. And they asked me for my cell phone number. And I wasn't sure why they wanted my cell phone number, because, you know, the Act, which is the Protection of Personal Information Act, prescribes 8 conditions for the processing of personal information. And one of the conditions is that processing should not be excessive. So I'm just making this as this statement as an introduction that I think Parliament has to lead by example in terms of looking at the processes that we've put in place and to ensure that the processes are in compliance with the Act, because we are in the new era in terms of how we should be processing personal information of people. I'm not saying that asking for my cell phone, we haven't discussed it, but the question is, what is the purpose for them recording my cell phone, and after it has been recorded, what processes have been put in place to ensure that my personal detail is secure? Because that's what the Act also provides. I'm just putting it to the committee so that the committee could maybe look at the way that Parliament processes personal information.
It's good you raise that, because there's a report by the South African Human Rights Commission which says that less than 40% of the people know about this Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And we have so many Chapter 9 institutions, and many of them have the responsibility to educate our people on the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Now, if we keep on saying that we have one of the best constitution in the country, but we don't educate our people on this Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and then you have a situation where Parliament itself can be accused of violating the rights of people, is a serious matter. You are not just raising it, by the way. It's a rude awakening to us that we all have to do what we are supposed to do. We spend a lot of money to pass that Act, Information Act, and then if we pass it but we are not taking it seriously, why do we have to invest in passing that legislation? Thank you for doing it, and don't apologize for it.
Thank you, Chair. Just to say finally, the regulator is really available to assist Parliament in terms of its compliance. We have a presentation which I'm going to do very quickly, and it has 5 parts: the introduction, update on the issues that were discussed in October 2017 with the committee, the capacity of the regulator, the budget, and the annual performance plan. Just one issue that I forgot. We are with Mr. Musala, Mr. Musala Nyana Musala. He is the acting chief executive officer of the committee. He is sitting on my right. Some of the issues, Chairperson, that were raised when we appeared before you, what is it that we are doing in terms of stakeholder and training engagement? Of course, we are continuing with this activity in compliance with Section 40 of the Act. And if you look at the presentation, we're supposed to have attached a schedule of all the stakeholder engagements and the programs and training programs that we have embarked on. So I won't go into detail as far as that is concerned. I hope the schedule is attached. And then another important, we also want to highlight some of the important issues that we have been dealing with. Honorable Chairperson and members should recall that the regulator was cited as the seventh respondent in the case of the Black Sash Trust versus Minister of Social Development and others. It was a constitutional court case. And we were cited insofar as the matter, the issue relating to the protection of personal information of grant beneficiaries was concerned. We took it upon ourselves to monitor the implementation of the court order, and we have held a series of meetings with the stakeholders that are mentioned in order to ensure two things, a number of things. One, that at the end of the contract between CPS and SASSA, CPS should dispose the personal information of grant beneficiaries and wanted to know from them what processes have they put in place for the disposal of that personal information. You also have to realize that payments are done by Green Road Bank, which also is holding a lot of personal information of grant beneficiaries. And we want also to know what they're going to do with that personal information at the end of the contract, of course, in line with the prescripts of the banking legislation. We also want to ensure that when SAPO takes over, this is the South African Post Office, payment of grants, they put in place adequate measures for the protection of personal information of grant beneficiaries. And in this regard, we have decided to establish a working committee consisting of all the stakeholders that are mentioned to ensure that we do constant monitoring. And as part of our monitoring responsibility, we've been interacting with the independent panel of experts that was appointed by the Constitutional Court, and we have already submitted two reports to them on the measures that we've taken to monitor the implementation of the court order. We also raised, when we appeared before you, the complaints that we continue to receive, and to emphasize the fact that we do handle complaints, but we do not have the power to enforce and settle those complaints because Section 73-111 of the Act are not yet operative, but we've decided to deal with those complaints on a proactive basis. And so far we have received in excess of 180 complaints, and some of them have been resolved. But we also have to understand that we appeal on the goodwill of the responsible parties or the persons against whom the complaints have been lodged. We depend on their goodwill to take action once we have brought the complaints to their attention. We also, at that time, also reported on the work that we're doing in terms of making regulations in terms of 112, Section 112 of the Act. At the time when we appeared before you, it was at a time when we had just published the regulations. After that, we did public hearings in all the nine provinces on the draft regulations. We also received many written submissions from many organizations. We considered each and every submission that we received, and where possible, we included the input in the regulations. And we have to say that the submissions were extremely helpful. We have now submitted the draft final regulations to the Office of the State Law Advisor because they have to vet the regulations for constitutional compliance. We are hoping that they will, and these processes we are told they take a long time, but immediately once the State Law Advisor has completed that process, then we'll have to table the regulations in Parliament in compliance with Section 1135A of the Act, which requires us to table the regulations in Parliament. And we have to, maybe the committee can assist us with this, because the process, we are not sure. If it says Parliament, as we know, it was both the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. And it is not the minister who tables. The Act says the regulator must table. We did write to the Speaker and the Chairperson of the National Assembly and the NCOP to just try to work out how that process is going to work, because that's all what the Act says. We must table the regulation. The other important matters that we dealt with, which was material data breaches that were in the public domain, would recall all of us a major data breach that was reported in the newspaper, of a big file that was found of about 30 million South Africans was found in Australia. It was somewhere in October last year. We followed up this matter. And we wrote to all the parties that were involved, Jigsaw, Goldbart, Draco, Data Science, and they responded. We received, responded, but you would recall that at that time there were also media reports that a number of law enforcement agencies were investigating this major data breach. So what we did proactively as the regulator was to convene a meeting of all the parties that were reported to be involved in the investigation of the major data breach, which included the National Prosecutorial Authority, the State Security Agency, the Hawks, Registrar of Deeds, National Credit Regulator, and the Credit Bureau Association. We held our meeting on the 21st of March. Everybody attended the meeting except the State Security Agency. We have established a task team, and the purpose really is to ensure that we all monitor how this investigation proceeds and to ensure that there is no duplication of efforts. We also all read about the data breach of Facebook by Facebook, and that the data of almost 60,000 South Africans, Facebook users, was said to have been shared with Cambridge Analytica. And immediately when this matter was reported, we wrote to Facebook to find out what they are doing about this alleged data breach. We have received a comprehensive response from Facebook, but what they are also indicating is that our sister organizations in the UK and in Ireland are investigating the same matter. And what we will be doing is to liaise with those two, which is the Information Commissioner of the UK and of Ireland. And these are organizations that we work with, and we'll be following up with them to share with us the investigation that they have done. You'd also recall that there was an issue that also this portfolio committee expressed concern on, which was the unlawful processing or alleged unlawful processing of the personal information of King Goodwill Zwelithini. We also took up that matter with My Way, and they also gave us a long response on what they have done to ensure that this does not the steps that the company has taken to address the matter. Although we are satisfied with the response, yesterday we wrote back to them to find out from them what training programs are they doing to ensure that their employees are well versed, are aware of the provisions of the law. So even that matter, we took it up. There's another matter that we are also looking into, and this is processing of personal information in the voters' rolls. Because we're in the new era now, is the way in which personal information is processed by the IEC in terms of the Electoral Act, because you know there is a provision in the Act and in the regulations that says that they have to publish the voter's roll that contains my name, my physical address, as the Constitutional Court says, and my ID number. And we have to check if that is compliant with the law, if this is not excessive processing, particularly because the ID, once you are in possession of my ID, you are in possession of my life. So we are trying to discuss with them. We are not in agreement. We think that including the ID in the published voter's roll is excessive processing. They seem to think that there is no problem with that. We are continuing engagement. I'm sure we'll find each other soon. There's also another issue that we are dealing with, and it affects all the political parties now that we are going into an election, and it relates to the unsolicited direct marketing by political parties. We know that in the run-up to an election, even now there's a by-election in my area, we have these phone calls that we receive. Sometimes there are messages on the phone where people ask you, political parties ask you to vote for one party or the other. The question is whether this conduct falls within the definition of direct marketing in Section 1 and Section 69 of the Act. We have requested an opinion of senior counsel on this matter, and we'll be finalizing it soon because I think we have a responsibility to advise our political parties on measures that they should take to comply with the Act. Now, coming to the issues we are here for, the organizational structure, we now have the acting chief executive officer, which is Mr. Mustala, very helpful, senior officer who has been in the public service for many years, and his presence will assist us to navigate this very difficult bureaucratic terrain as we establish the regulator. So he's been seconded from the Department of Justice, and also acting head of legal, who's also been seconded. Now, honorable members would know that in terms of our Act, Section 47.5 states that the regulator must consult the Minister of Finance in appointing staff. That's the person that we have to consult. And as soon as we were established, we wrote to the then minister. We have had a number of ministers, but to one of them, we wrote to him to say we are here and this is the structure. We are asking you to please authorize. And at that time, we had asked him to authorize the appointment of the CEO only at a particular salary because we thought once we get the CEO then will assist us to establish. And then he sent us officials who said to us from Treasury to say, no, you can't do it like that. You have to go to the Department of Public Service and Administration because your Act says that the benefits of your staff have to be compatible with that of public service. It doesn't say public, it says public sector. It doesn't say public service, public sector. So we went to the DPSA. And there was very little movement, so we took it upon ourselves to then, as we reported when we came in October, we went to the DPSA, to the Public Service Commission to say, can you assist us with this? And the Public Service Commission was very helpful. They gave us a long list of documents that we had to compile, which have to accompany the draft structure. We compiled those documents ourselves, and if you can see, some of them are quite complex, but we did so, and one of the requirements in those documents was also that we have to undertake a benchmarking exercise to prove that whatever structure that we are putting in place, we have benchmarked it against similar structures nationally and internationally. So in January, it was the last leg of the compilation of the documents. So we took off and went to Canada, UK, and Germany. And after that, we thought now we had made progress, and we went back to the DPSA and says, now, here are the documents. How do we proceed? They said, no, you have a problem. You see, we can't approve your structure because you have to be listed in the PFMA. Now, we looked at the provisions of the PFMA. If you look at our act, it provides that we must appoint the chief executive officer, who is the accounting officer. The advice that we were given by the DPSA was that we should make a case for the classification of the regulator as a Schedule 3A national public entity. But that is where the problem comes. You see, a national public entity has a controlling body or a board as the accounting authority. So these two are now, you know, we have a contradiction between our act, which provides for the chief executive officer as the accounting officer, and then you have a national, the PFMA that says in a body such as ours, the accounting authority is the controlling body. So we are stuck. We then approach the Deputy Minister of Justice to say we are back to the issue of certification. You have to assist us. So we agreed that he will help us to meet with the Minister of Finance. We are no longer going back to DPSA. I think the Minister of Finance is the person that we are supposed to consult in law. And we're hoping that once that meeting takes place, which will be soon, we'll be able to resolve this issue, because that's the only issue that we have to resolve, because we have the draft organizational structure. We have, you know, our schedule to say we had scheduled that in September we want to advertise key executive positions, which will be the CEO, the CFO, and the chief information officer. So that's where we are, Chairperson. And I'm hoping that even this committee will assist us, because there's a lot of work, lots of expectations from this regulator, not only nationally but also internationally, for South Africa to take the lead on some of these issues continentally as well. So unless this regulator is fully functional, it's going to be difficult. We are doing a lot of work. I have to emphasize that. If you look at the training schedule, our training schedule, both the public sector and the private sector are requesting us to train them so that people are ready for when the act is implemented. At that time, people will have been ready. So I don't want us to leave this committee with the impression that we're sitting and not doing this. The six of us, the team that is sitting here, we are so overwhelmed, but we need to be assisted with the establishment of the regulator so that we can be able to appoint the staff. I will then, with your kind permission, Chairperson, leave it here and then request our acting CEO to take you quickly through the budget and also our plans for 2018-2019.
Do you want to intervene?
Yes, Chairperson, I couldn't hear you.
Pardon?
I couldn't hear you.
No, I was just saying that congratulating and thanking the advocate Kakula for dealing with current issues. These are issues that are closer to the hearts of the people. That's what we expect of structures that we expect. We establish a parliament that they must address issues that are closer to the the people, and also congratulating Dr. Musala for his appointment and giving him the platform. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair and honorable members. The budget of the regulator still lies in the branch constitutional development of the Department of Justice. So we are not allocated a budget directly from National Treasury. So for the 2018-19, the regulator has been allocated 27.3 million. For 2019-20, it's 27.9 million. And for the outer year, it's 30.4 million. And if we just go back to the previous financial year on what was allocated to the regulator, the allocation was 25.9 million, and it was broken down into compensation of employees, which was 17.4 million, goods and services budget of 4.9 million, and capital assets budget of 2.5 million. And the expenditure thereof is as follows. Compensation of employees, the regulator could only spend 8.1 million of that budget. And goods and services, 2.3 million. Capital expenditure, 169,000. And then the reason for under expenditure was, like the chair has said, is unresolved capacity issues that still is with us. So that is how we performed in terms of the budget in the previous financial year. And in this year's budget, I've already indicated that we've received 27.3 million. And compensation of employees will be 18.5 million. The goods and services budget is 6.2. Capital asset budget is 2.6 million. And we've planned as follows in terms of the budget. Compensation of employees will take a large portion of that budget. It will go to salaries of members, because it's only members that are paid salaries from the budget. If we get the structure approved on time and we are able to fill the positions that are in the structure, particularly the executive positions, that will go to the filling of those positions. And for the goods and service budget, we have a procurement plan that has been approved by the Department of Justice, because our budget still lies within the department and has been submitted to National Treasury. And it will be assisting us with, amongst others, the procurement of services of people who come in and map processes around issues of complaints, the issues of visibility of the regulator, and the issues of educating the public about the Act. And then the capital budget will go towards procurement of machinery and furniture. And then the next slide deals with the annual performance plan for 2018-19. And the first slide deals with the approved public awareness strategy. The regulator aims to, in the first quarter, to put a draft on the table, and that draft will be approved in the second quarter, and the phase one of the strategy will be implemented in the third quarter, and phase one will continue during the fourth quarter. So that's the public awareness strategy that would ensure that the regulator makes the public aware of its functions and its services. And then the regulator has also to put together an approved research strategy that is mentioned in the Act. And there's already a draft on the table. The regulator intends to approve the draft during this quarter, by the end of this quarter, and to commission projects arising from the strategy. And the research project will continue during the third quarter, and the results thereof will be put on the table during the fourth quarter. And then, as the chair has talked about the approved regulations, I will not waste time on this one, but safe to say that the regulation will be tabled to Parliament in the third quarter of this financial year, with the intended implementation in the fourth quarter. And then there will be guidelines and notices that are supposed to be developed according to the Act, and the regulator intends to do 40% of the guidelines and notices in the first quarter, do the rest in the second quarter, and to begin the consultation process with relevant stakeholder in the third quarter, and the consultation will continue in the fourth quarter. And then there's also a stakeholder engagement strategy that the regulator plans, and the engagement strategy has been developed. It will be approved in the second quarter, it will get implemented in the third, and the implementation will continue in the fourth quarter. The chair indicated that the regulator at the moment is dealing with complaints, but because sections of the Act are not in operation at the moment, we're dealing with the complaint as they come in from the public and we're trying to resolve them. But in anticipation of these sections coming into effect, we've decided to solicit the services of a service provider to map processes on complaints management so as to ensure that as complaints come in, they are resolved timely. And to this effect, the regulator will be appointing a service provider in the third quarter of this year, with the execution intended to start during the fourth quarter of 2018-19. And then the chairperson has also alluded to the issue of the approved organizational structure. If everything goes well with the intended consultation with the Minister of Finance, we're intending to advertise our executive positions in the third quarter with the aim of filling them in during the last quarter of this financial year. There are corporate services policies that the regulator has got to put in place, and to this effect, the draft recruitment policy has been developed. It has got to be approved. The recruitment policy will also be developed with the aim of approving it in the third quarter and implementing it in the fourth quarter. As I've said, that will be filling positions around that time. And on the governance policies, Chair, we have a charter of roles and responsibilities developed that needs to be approved, and the issue of delegations of authority is being planned and will be getting it approved in the fourth quarter in preparation of the new financial year 2019-20. And the approved branding and communication strategies, I've said, in our procurement plan. We're also trying to get a communication strategy in place for the regulator so that we can deal with issues of visibility of the regulator. That, in short, Chair, would take care of our plans for 2018-19. Thank you. Oh, the issue of accommodation, my apologies, Chair. In terms of accommodation, we are still accommodated in the Department of Justice, and we've got about 8 offices there, but in anticipation of the regulator filling positions, we've had engagement with DPW to begin to source a proper accommodation for the regulator. To this effect, they've promised that by the first week of the last quarter, they would have accommodation ready for us after they would have gone through their own procurement process within the DPW.
That's our presentation, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. You've now referred to people who hit the ground running, but I sit with this worry that I think we were first given an indication when the appointments were made for the 1st of December 2016 that by the end of 2017 everything would be up and running. And while I appreciate the feedback in terms of the frustrations and the hiccups, I think what also should be considered is that if we look at what was reported to us at the beginning of October last year, I think it would seem that very little progress has been made since. Because at that stage already we were informed about the meeting with the Minister of Finance and the engagements with the PSC as well as the Department of Public Service and the pending finalization of the organogram. So I think my plea is at this stage to get more detailed feedback in respect of dates and times, and specifically what has been happening since our last engagement, and then this it would seem the ultimate stumbling block of whether who's to be the accounting officer. I want to get a sense of whether that has been established right at the beginning. And if so, why the regulator has then waited up to now to try and settle the matter? And if not, then the question must be asked whether the regulator itself properly analyzed its foundational document, the Act. Because, Chair, to my mind, what apart from the fact that yes, there's been budgetary provision, and it was ironically so helpful to the Department of Justice in this last financial year to shift the unspent funds. This regulator is to perform a vital function in our maturing democracy. So we can't wait for this to become, for the regulator to become fully operational. And in saying that, I also want to venture the opinion that in the manner in which the regulator is known to have been established, at least, well, not in theory, but as an entity without being capacitated or empowered by the implementation of the full act, there's a danger that ultimately it will erode public confidence and trust in the regulator if we can't get them to a situation where the act can become fully operational. So in looking at the big data breaches and the manner in which the regulator has addressed it, it's good to know that they're at least mindful of what is happening. But the reality is at this stage, their hands are tied behind their back. And ultimately, if this is not addressed very soon so that they can get the teeth that the Act in theory wants to give them, South Africans will start wondering whether it was worth the while to go through the exercise of setting up the regulator. Thank you, Chair.
Well, you're saying they were hitting the ground running with their hands tied behind their back. No, it's unfair. Huh? Honorable Matthias.
Well, thanks so much, our Chair. Before the regulator, we had Legal Aid Board, and they too complain about being treated like a different cousin, different from other cousins. Perhaps that's the case with the information regulator. Why should we have these bodies when you be complaining and they would be treated, have a feeling that they're treated like distant cousins? Perhaps in the case of the regulator is even worse than a cousin, because a cousin will often seek mediation through his uncle. Perhaps in this case there's not an uncle. Well, look, the regulator was appointed in September already, 2016, and they made the first appearance around March in 2017 before the committee. And immediately thereafter, they presented or announced the strategic plan as well as the annual performance plan. I would guess that that should have heralded into the regulator developing different business models. And through such models, they should be in a position to hit the ground running. But how would they hit the ground running if they are incapacitated? But before we talk about him being, the regulator being incapacitated, the question that comes is, have they been able to develop a sound business model and presented it before us beyond what they presented at the strategic plan in 2017? And two, have they done what the necessary lobbying and lobbying and advocacy for all and sundry to know that there is a new police, there is a new sheriff in town, and the sheriff is here to do the work. So it's important that the role of the new sheriff, in this case the regulator, must be escalated. Perhaps it will be through the different advocacy, outreach, branding, and all of that that they propose in the presentation. Perhaps the direct question which you must put to them is, who is incapacitating? Is it the Department of Public Service and Administration, or is it the Department of Treasury? So that we know who is the culprit in this case. Who is incapacitating the information regulator? Is it DPSA or is it the National Treasury? So that we know who is the culprit, Honorable Chair, so that we talk to the culprit. And lastly, maybe we need to ask the department not to treat the regulator as an orphan, well than a distant cousin. Stop to treat it as an orphan and give the powers to it and give it space to appoint its senior personnel. Secondment, of course, can be an interim intervention. But there's a need that they are given the necessary space for to exercise autonomy and independence, to appoint personnel that would be effective, would be properly skilled, properly competent, with the required merits to do the work, so that when they report next year or any other time soon, they're able to report that they must report on the execution of the strategic plan. They should not be held at random, hamstrung in the manner in which they've been hamstrung, and only report on complaints. Lastly, perhaps we must advise Advocate Kakula perhaps to visit the office of the Evaluator General. The office has been appointed very recently by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, and the business model that they have presented in the portfolio committee, it's worth looking into. The mandate is quite different between the two, but the business model could help in a great deal to take the information regulator's office forward. Thanks, Chair.
Sharing with us the benefit of your insights from other committees, Honorable Matthias, Honorable Mutako.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm also looking at time, Chairperson. It's 13:23, and today we are meeting at 2. Remember? Yes. Okay, let me start by thanking Information Regulator for the presentation and welcome all the commissioners to this meeting. I also share the concern Advocate Dagula you shared about reception, our visitor center asking for your cell phone number. Then it came to my mind that even when we go to other public places, they go to an extent of asking about our ID numbers. You write in that book, you see names and ID numbers of people who came before you. Mm. Then I think also that should be looked into. Yeah. And also the banks, Chairperson, nowadays, ID of Hoshi is appearing on each and every community member form, especially First National Bank. Full names of a Hoshi, Matpuani Mutapo Refilo, and so forth, ID number, blah, 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 blah. Every community member knows. the ID number, because he's having that form, it takes to the FNB. So also that in the private sector should be looked into. And then in terms of, let me not be long, office space, because this morning I met with Deputy Minister somewhere, asking him where you are now, even in terms of your documents. It appears you are still at the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. Yes. So I would like to know, because I can see here in terms of your the annual target, you are planning to secure your own office accommodation. Also comment on that issue of personnel, the CEO and yourself. The CEO and yourself, my apologies, talk to it. And then I'm also very much concerned about the contradictions of Protection of Personal Information Act and the PFMA, the Public Finance Management Act, in terms of the personnel issue and accountability thereof. So I would like to align myself with Honorable Mathieu Sede, because in terms of PFMA, it means then the board, subject to correction, should be the accounting officer, isn't it? The board.
Yes.
Then in terms of Protection of Personal Information Act, the CEO. Very serious contradiction. Please get to that very urgently. Because we want to see this very important office up and running by yesterday. Very important. As and when we are seated here with you, listening to you, these 087 numbers are just coming in. We don't know where they get. They want us to confirm our IDs and so forth. So if this office, very important office, is not running, institution is not running. So we are risking to have a lot of issues which are not good coming to us. And I would like to applaud your offices, although I want to have a feedback regarding the four cases you dealt with, My Way, Master D.
Oh, no, sorry. My Way.
This chair, you know, we are not used to. Sometimes you shift, you fall. You see. My apologies. So I'm afraid of falling. Especially My Way one. I would like to know how it was resolved. In relation, because here you didn't give full details on the result, where an individual speaking to His Majesty wants 10 pieces of tole. Later, that was on social media, some of us saw it, a very private conversation with His Majesty. Even if it was an just an ordinary person, that person constitutionally has a right to privacy. So also you can, maybe in a nutshell, not giving a long story, how you dealt with it. And then I also like to appreciate the engagement you had in terms of Section 1 and locally meaning country, in the country, and Section 2, the international engagements you have. Kindly share with us. And then I'm also just very much concerned, my apologies, regarding the underspending, although I understand you'll argue that because certain sections of the Act are not yet in place, that's why the underspending, but only spending 970,000 of 20 million is a very serious underspending. For now, Chairperson, thank you so much.
Honorable Sarte, I'm not going to speak.
I'll
recognize the fine. Honorable Lampinian.
Yes, I just want to
thank them for the good work they are doing. And it's not very easy to start building the house. You know, it's easier to renovate here and there. But I just wanted to find out about this section that says accountability. The side with the CEO. And wanted to find out if you don't think it needs to be amended. Basically that.
He's also afraid to cough.
Thank you. Just those basically two things. How can we assist in that way? And also if there is any part of the act or any section that you wish that it be amended to assist you in your work. Thank you very much.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair, and greetings to the information regulator is led by Advocate Kakula. Yeah, well, just three questions. I think I saw from the report that you have so far received 180 complaints, and I think you further indicated that some of them you have attended to. So I want to know as to how many out of the 180, how many you have been able to attend to. Secondly, are you perhaps having the complaint screening and management system? If you don't have, how are you handling these particular cases without the complaint screening and management system? And then the last question, I saw that in your budget, I think you have set aside 18.5 million rands for compensation of employees. So I want to know as to how many posts are we going to create with this 18.5 million rands. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and maybe let me also appreciate the report from the information regulator. Indication, Advocate Kabula, is that you engaged in a benchmarking exercise. Now, my question would be, after that exercise, did you come back with more questions or did you come back with some recommendations worth noting or taking into consideration? Because I would expect that exercise to actually assist us. Now, you were advised by the commission, public service, the Public Service Commission, that you need to be listed as a Schedule 3A entity. And now it seems you are no longer going there. Was that advice wrong? Because I want us to actually deal with these contradictions between the two pieces of legislation.
The public, they will not understand what is this Schedule 3 thing.
Yes.
We must address the, make what we say accessible to the public.
Thank you, Chair. And then, lastly, you mentioned something on the voter's roll, that you want to check whether this could be compatible with the constitution. And look, we are just on the eve of elections. and we are trying to implement what the Constitutional Court said on the issue of addresses and the staff. How long do you think this issue can take before? Because we need to deal with that, and I believe most political parties would like to have those voters' rolls so that they assist in identifying people who still need to correct their addresses, and the voters' roll will be coming with their ID numbers. So, okay, I just wanted to talk. To check the time that you have allocated yourself to ensure that this is done. Thank you very much.
You must also explain if you have not just violated the information.
Oh. the information regulator. Yeah, I will start my question on page 10 about the. You said that you are failing to execute your power or to enforce or to settle a complaint in terms of section 73-111 because it's not yet enforced. The question is, when do you think this section will be operative? Secondly, my question is about the email, the hacking of emails. You said in your committee you invited the other sister department and the state security agency failed to come. I wanted to know, did you continue to form the committee without the state security agency? And how are you going to deal with sensitive hacking of phones and emails information if you don't have the state security agency in your committee? The other issue in your presentation, I don't know, Advocate Takula, why did you, the Treasury, misinformed you, like what Honorable Maela is saying, that whether, what is the difference? Because your act, which controlling you, section 47.5, is clear that you must consult the Treasury. So when the Treasury divert you from them to the DPSA, which act were they following? Was it a common sense, or was just somebody trying to run away from responsibility? Because the legislature, the parliament has made the law to regulate you, and they tell you in section 47.5 that you consult Treasury, the Minister of Finance. So that's why the DPSA, they don't know where your futures, because they want you to be like an entity with the board and everything, and you are totally different animal from them. So I wanted to know, the Treasury, maybe there is another legislation which violate section 47 of your act. What is your draft sketch or contingency plan in order to get the information from other spheres of government, like provinces and municipalities down there? Because it's like your office is only operating nationally. So do you have any plan for meantime to get the information from the provinces and the department? The acting COO presented the budget. They said the budget for the employee was 17.5 for 17.4 million, and only 8.1 million were used. I want to know, how many employees do you have for this 8.1 million used for the previous financial year? And the different of 17 and 8 million, because we have another entity which was here, the legal aid was here. The budget has been cut. They are not operating actively because they don't have enough budget. While you have the budget of 17.4 million, you don't use it, you use only 8.5. The rest, I don't know what is going to happen because the treasury will be tempted to cut your budget as things go on. The issue of public awareness is very serious because I last hear about the regulator when we voted for you advocate in parliament. From there, I never heard it anywhere until today. So it means the level of awareness, you need to beef up your awareness so that people must know you from grassroots level. And also you must also check with the INATIS. INATIS is the system which regulates the registration of vehicles. There was a company called Tasima. So they were selling the information to the security companies. If you go to the building complex or residential complex, you find they have your information there. And you don't know where they got it. It's like Tasima was selling that information to the security companies, which I think is also not according to the, is contrary to the act. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Just briefly, I also want to express our deepest condolences on the passing of your husband, Advocate Tlakula. We've come a long way together as friends, and so just accept that from my side personally as well. And thank you for being here today. Our thoughts and prayers are with you at this time. I just also just wanted to indicate, if we can, it seems like you've been sent from pillar to post when it comes to finding your staff establishment, your organogram and that. So not only, as my colleague said, are you an orphan, but you seem to be passed around, and we need to step in and try to remove that orphan status and help you in our oversight role. If there's any way that you now see that the Act needs to be amended to accommodate the changes, whether it's PFMA, whether there is a contradiction between the two or a conflict, then we could consider an urgent committee bill, because I'm sure that you, like us, want to see the information regulators and institution running as quickly as possible. My concern is going back to finance now, is that you're back to square one almost, and you are where you should be. But then they could send you on back again, and it's like you're a ping-pong ball, just getting backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards. So, Chair, maybe with your permission, we might ask the information regulator to keep us up to standard with just writing to us and say, this is where you're faced with, as we exercise oversight over the executive that are not helping you to get running, that we can, and say, this is the problem, and we could consider, if necessary, I'm not saying it's necessary, but if necessary, as Advocate Mpawana said, a possible urgent legislative amendment to deal with that possible conflict. Thank you, Chair.
We have to be in the House at 2 o'clock, and this also reflects that as Parliament, we mustn't just pass laws because bills are before us, because we are responsible for passing quality legislation. And if we have an act which now is not clear how it relates to other existing legislation, it's reflecting on us as well. And we passed a law yesterday, and now already we must be considering how to amend a law. It's a bad reflection on Parliament. So we really have to deal with that issue. Maybe what we should be having is really a report on the implementation of the Act, the inconsistencies, the challenges, and so on, because at 2 o'clock we must be in the House. And we can't bring you here to be dealing, ask you to deal with our own failures. But, Chairperson, can you just briefly respond, because the honourable members have to eat
and then go to the House. And then prepare a report for us on all the challenges and where you are being let down and by whom, and then we must deal with those matters.
Chair, I don't know, in the time that we have, it will be difficult for us to respond to this. Can we probably follow what you said to the legal aid and provide you written responses to all these questions? Because I'm scared that, you know, to just go through that, they're quite involved, all of them. Especially, we were asked for dates and things, and we can provide that. So if you don't mind, we can give you responses in writing.
Maybe, Chair, if I may, Chair, maybe the most crucial question around section, the establishment in with regards to how Section 49 of the PFMA, which is not so clear about who is the controlling body, maybe we can respond to that with the permission of our chairperson, because it's a cross-cutting. Chair. Oh, thank you. Chair, just to give the House some comfort, there is the possibility that, and this is a problem, if the accounting officer is deemed to be the CEO, then the board status is questionable. But under Section 49 of the PFMA, with specific reference to Section 3, it says the relevant treasurer in exceptional circumstances may approve or instruct that another functionary or public entity must be the accounting authority for that public entity. What that means is that the treasury under exceptional circumstances, because the accounting officer and the accounting authority cannot coexist, can give under exceptional circumstances, and that's what our chairman has now exploited, to say we must approach and we must apply and we must ask Treasury to remove the accounting authority status of the accounting officer so that there's no conflict between the members and the accounting officer, and then afford those powers to the members, and that now will make us to have that interim measure. But in a longer view, it can be considered to say what type of changes or legislative amendments we'd like to see. But in short, we would like to give some more consideration for that specific section which allows us.
You still have teething problems, go and prepare a response to us and recommendations and how we can remove obstacles to the implementation of the Act, and if there are inconsistencies and there are desired amendments, point all those out, and this is an important institution. We want it to work and work properly. But thank you very much for the report. It has educated us. And as I said, you are actually dealing with the, you know, critical issues that are facing our people, and we appreciate that. You are well excused.
Thank you, Chair. Just one word with your permission. You see, I didn't want to go into that section because it has its own difficulties, because we are sui generis. We are sui generis. We don't fall within any of that. But we'll address it with the Finance Minister. Thank you.
Yes, exactly. What is sui generis?
Unique. We are unique. We don't fall. We should have been in Chapter 9 of the Constitution, but we are not, because that will, if we are to be put in Chapter 9, the Constitution will have to be amended. So we are like floating, but we are sui generis. We want to maintain that. Because once we go the accounting authority route, then it changes. We have to report somewhere else.
Honorable Mpumulwana wants us to use indigenous languages. Look, now we are using Latin, sui generis, then we have explained, and the parliament bell is ringing whilst we are still explaining Latin words and the Latin things are there. Honorable
Chair, I think it's as sweet as a pansy. That's what sui generis means. Chair, are we meeting with the MPA? No, 2 p.m. So are they going to be at 2?
Yes.
Because I was my excuses because I'm also speaking in the house this afternoon, Jay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I could suggest that we meet, and then when it's time for voting, we rush that side. Unfortunately, our secretariat couldn't secure those venues nearby. Yes.